it was an educational process putting on the first ever Beyond the Valley, because it was
you've seen the Firefest documentary, but I think the main thing that was the huge learning curve was coming out of that at age 20, and you know, we suffered a strong, like a big financial loss. Like at that age, and you know, our company, like we lost $1 million in our first year.
20 years of age and you lost $1 million on your first festival.
We didn't have the money.
I was still living with my mum when I was 20 years old.
So was I. Yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of Dylan Friends. This week on the show, two of my oldest friends, Filippo Palermo and Mike Christides, co-founders of the Untitled Group. Mike and Phil are two absolute legends with incredible stories. At 20 years of age, they ran their first New Year's Eve festival, Beyond the Valley. Now, 8 years later, they're regarded as Australia's largest independently owned music and events company. The masterminds behind the much-loved music festivals, Beyond the Valley, Pitch Music and Arts, Wildlands, Grapevine Gathering, For the Love, and Ability Fest. Hosting some of the biggest artists around the world, Chance the Rapper, Rufus, Solomon, Tyler the Creator, The Wombats, Skepta, The Kooks, The Presets, and many, many more. They've done so much at such a young age, and I absolutely admire the way these two go about it. They are pure hustlers that back themselves in. And as mentioned, not only are they hosting some big events, but they're doing some incredible things supporting the music industry in Australia. You'll honestly be in disbelief of some of the stories that these two have. They've done it all and they've got plenty more to come. So sit back, relax and enjoy. Let's go.
My name is Deborah, Dylan's mum. Welcome to the Dylan Friends podcast.
Many ways I've been waiting my whole life for this moment.
Tears.
Strength.
I'm like, I run. She's like, everyone runs. I'm like, but does everyone go to the Olympics?
They're sitting there meditating, going, oh my God, I think I'm meditating. How good is this? I'm meditating. It's like,
they had a Wu-Tang call. I was like, yo, Dylan, thanks for getting us in.
Just love it.
It's knuckle puck time. Yeah. It's like
don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.
Mike and Phil, welcome to the Dylan Friends podcast, my friends. It's been a long time in the making. I've been trying to get onto you two for a long time, and the listeners are in for an absolute treat today. Welcome, firstly, Mike, to you.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. It's good to finally be here.
Phil.
Thank you, Dylan. It's good to finally have answered your phone call.
I kept passing on to Phil.
You two, look, I like to think I'm in demand. You two are the busiest men I've ever met in my life. And I think today we're going to understand why. We've obviously known each other for a long time. I know you're big fans of the show. Yeah. Which you're not, because you had no idea that I was even doing a podcast. I don't think when I spoke to you recently.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
Mike, did I tell you, Phil, the other day? Mike, I called Mike to come on the show. He said, congratulations. When did you get back from Sydney? I said, 2 years ago. And then he said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Well, he's stumbling. He's never been hit between the eyes. And I said, then he goes, oh, well, I owe you a congratulations on getting engaged. I said, that was also 2 years ago. So that was the last time he spoke to me.
And then when you promised me on this podcast, you said you'd grill me on here, mate. It'll
get
you.
Yeah, dude. All right, we'll have to get that out of the way. Boys, I know, as I said, you know how it works. I like to go back to the start of how I know the guests. And for you two, we've known each other for a long time.
Okay,
probably,
long time.
Phil, I reckon we've probably known each other since under 10s.
Yeah,
10 years old?
Yeah, 10 years old. 10, 11 years old, I would say, yeah.
And Phil, mate, and Mike, maybe, I reckon, 13 or 14.
Yeah, well, I started off as the waterboarding.
For everyone that listens to the show, they know the infamous story of the best under 15s team in
of all time.
Okay,
in the world.
So they beat the Toby Greens, the Jack Vineys, the Tom Mitchells of the world. Two of the illustrious world players in that team were you two.
Yeah.
And as you said, you were the water boy. I can fair say, and I hope you don't take this personally, you weren't there on talent.
Oh man,
you were there. you were pure tone setter, as we'd say. You were setting the tone.
The vibe,
you were bringing the
happy
vibe.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. And Phil, you were pretty handy.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I was pretty handy.
Do you remember that? Because I played, you know, halfback flank. Yeah, chuck Mike.
Yeah, I think if we put him in the midfield, it would have been a different result.
Do you remember that one goal I kicked
in the grand final?
It's like the one goal. It's like I ran the whole field. Everyone just kept giving it back to me because they're like, holy fuck. And I just put boot to ball. I reckon the whole team came and hugged me and I was like, this is the best. I fucking quit now.
Yeah.
And I did. Never played sport again.
Do you guys look back now? And I don't think you would, because you've absolutely dominated your own career path. But you look back, sometimes you see on the footy and you see Toby, Tom Mitchell, Jack Viney running around. You go, I actually owned them when I was 15 years old.
Yeah. I schooled the shit out of them. In the under 15s premiership.
He does.
Let's go back to the start. You're obviously co-founders of Untitled Group now. You run Beyond the Valley, Grapevine Festival, fucking 15 others that there's so many out there that you're doing, nightclubs, everything, events, your talent. You do everything. And there's much more coming, which we'll get into throughout today. But how did this start? What was the idea?
Oh, it's funny that you mentioned the footy before, because shout out to old mate Matt McLennan, our under-15s coach, decided, you know what, no, done with plumbing, I want to buy a bar, and bought the infamous Suede Bar on Smith Street. Oh, God. Which had a lovely basement function room, and I'll never
nice
forget.
And tucked away.
Yeah,
and
nice
hidden.
And tucked away and hidden. And DJing was like, you know, the cool thing at the time.
What was your DJ name?
Mashed Potato.
Mashed Potato.
Yeah, because yeah, I did mash up, so you know, yeah, it's fitting.
And because everyone was a DJ, you know, Brock, Matt's son, Brock. Yeah, Phil, everyone was. Yeah. You were a fucking DJ, probably.
I think
too.
So. For yeah, just a couple of nights. Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the promoter. I'm going to be the guy that, like, you know.
Like the water boy, yeah, you were then the promoter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hello, ladies, welcome.
Oversaturated market, the DJ field. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember this, but yeah, like we were throwing those parties that start off as underages, you know, no alcohol serve, whatever, they weren't too popular. And then there was this little thing, is the emergence of the fake ID, which yep, I was pretty nifty with, you know, toothpick and a bit of Astor and whatnot. So yeah, everyone kind of started flaunting the fake IDs, and we started throwing those parties hidden in the basement, and they got more and more popular, more and more popular. And before you know it, there's bloody 317-year-old kids raging in the basement. Yeah, sometimes the police would do a walkthrough. Remember, we'd turn the music real down, and everyone would go, and then you know, we'd get the text like, yeah, everyone quiet, quiet. Police would leave. Back on field, slam on a play, you know, that kind of thing, and then hands to the floor. So, yeah, the parties were doing really well there. And then, obviously, there were a lot of big nightclubs at the time, After Dark, Social Club, and whatnot. And it was Dom Dollar and Vedran, good yep, friend of ours.
Yes.
That gave us our first ever guest list. I'm like, yeah, we want you to promote for us at After Dark.
And yeah, but before that, even just before we started promoting at After Dark and all these other club nights, I got Mike to. I was like, man, I think I really like this DJ thing. I think I might take it a bit more seriously. Can you make me like a legit fake ID so I can go and play?
Right. And like, so, yeah. So just for context, you guys at this age are 17.
No, 16. No, we were 16 at this time. Yeah. Yeah. You're pushing. I think you were being like.
I'm trying to be a bit, you know.
Mike, cut the shit.
Before we go any further, Mike, cut the shit. Straight up. Let's just be real with Dylan. Okay, he knows us. Okay.
I know worse things than this. Okay.
Cool. Let's get it all.
All right. 16 years old, right? And then I asked Mike for a fake ID, and I start DJing at a few, like Brown Alley and Fashion Keyboard and all these old club nights in Melbourne. And Mike would come and he'd kind of like party with me throughout the night. And it was through that I started DJing for this promoter, Nick Greco, and he was running a night at Tramp on Tuesdays. It was like a big uni night. Mike's fake ID that he made me ended up getting taken away from me at one club because it was just shit.
Yep.
Then I went to an old mate, Toby Hudson, and I was like, I feel like I
was
kind
shit,
of
by the way. You fucked up.
Yeah. I choked at the front door. Yeah. That's why they were like,
what's the star sign? Seven.
So I asked a mate of mine, Toby, for his ID. He gave it to me, and it worked brilliantly. Got me into Tramp, and I told Nick that I'd start DJing for him, and he thought my name was Toby for probably, you know, a couple of years. 2 years passed, we like get to the age of 18, and Mike's promoting at the club by then, and we're kind of like entering that schoolies phase, and we're about to do a bunch of muck-up parties. And we go to Nick. Well, first I'm like, by the way, my name's not Toby, sorry about like
all. Well, actually what happened was Nick, so we didn't just do it on our own accord. Nick's like, I fucking love working with you guys. He's now our business partner in Untitled, by the way.
Yeah, the last seven. Yeah.
So, he goes, love working with you guys. We're smashing these pens down mock-up parties. Let's open a nightclub together. Like, let's do it in a few weeks or in a month, whatever. We're both still in year 12.
Yeah.
And we go, fuck. All right, look, Nick.
The gig's up. Yeah.
Toby's name's actually Phil. And I'm not 20. I just turned 18.
Yeah.
And credit to him, he laughed and he goes, you guys get through year 12. Let's launch the club next year and we can do it all properly and whatnot. And so he did. Nick waited. And then we brought on with the launch of Treehouse, we brought on a new, our other business partners, Christian Serrero.
Yep.
And then the fifth member of Untitled, Tom Core. So for the launcher anyway. But yeah, credit to Nick. When he found that out, he was like, I respect that. And we got thrust from being underage, kind of just party throwers and whatnot. We threw a few parties at the Royal Derby Hotel, which was great. But into launching Treehouse, which was a huge next step for us.
Massive stair step. Yeah. Anyone at the age, I reckon, born around that 93, 94, 92, if you and you lived in Melbourne, if you hadn't heard of Treehouse Nightclub, you
well, there's Treehouse and Club Soda. They were like the two. Bouncing back and forward, and it was just a great era of I think dance music as well. Like, you know, like Sam One More and Tonight Only, and
But then it took after Treehouse, we got our real big opportunity through the Palace Theatre, which like used to be known as the Metro, and it's like our parents used to go on nightclubs.
Infamous for like massive party spots, isn't it? And that too.
So they closed down for a while, and then the owners were looking for someone to come in and relaunch it as a club night. So we got a pretty lucky opportunity there, brokered a deal, moved in, we're running every single Saturday. And then that's where we kind of developed this new dance music culture that we were listening to on the radio on Triple J.
You'll get the launch weeks of anyway, you know. We launched with Alice in Wonderland, Peking Duck, Parachute Youth, Rufus Did It Set,
Dom Dollar.
Features, Dom Dollar, you know, and you look at all those artists where they are now. And it's great that we still work with all of them and good friends with a lot of them. And it's great that as we've rose, you know, look at the where their careers have gone. And, you know, I think the greatest story of it is like Rufus headlined the first Beyond the Valley. They took a punt. We'll get to that in a second because we're jumping forward. But from headlining the first BTV to now headlining the last BTV and selling out instantly 25,000 tickets, like it as the band grows, the festival and stuff grows with it. So it's a really good thing. But back to like launching anyway, that was probably the next big elevation because Treehouse was doing about 1,500 people a week and it was still young party club culture. Anyway was where we really need to realize we have to have systems and protocol and we have to really look at this as a prop.
Start to like run a business.
Put this into context as well. Like you are just so confident with this and you're telling a story like anyone could do it. You're 18, 19 at this age.
Yeah.
Everyone else that does this is like 30, 40 years old and has been doing it for years.
I think that was one of our advantages though. You know,
because we knew the audience.
Yeah, we knew the audience. We knew what kids wanted to listen to.
You outside most weeks. Yeah, Dill, get you.
I was the guy that like, and not because of anything, but I hated lining up.
Yeah.
So I was always just calling you two straight out the front being like, please just let me slide through these
doors. Yeah. Anyway, was at its peak, like the lines, like the reason why it also got a lot of like attention at the start was we needed like 3,000 people to fill the place, so like let's go ham on promoting it. And that about 6,000 people rocked up to the launch night, and when everyone got told that it's full capacity, they all the lines started wrapping around and started just storming the door. So the riot police actually got called down, shut off the front of the doors, and everybody spilled around the front. We got this amazing photo, like the Studio 54 Club in New York. Like just people spilled around the front of a theater.
It was such a mess because we're all 18 years old and we're like, we're kind of trying to celebrate it as well because we've worked so hard up until this point, engaging crew, booking Alice in Wonderland and like the next few weeks of
promotion. Phil actually did the visuals himself. He did Justice, We Are Your Friends, and he was on his thing going, "Wee!
Your friends." That was like the peak of production at the fucking era. So, I just remember we had no idea what to do with the situation and the venue just took over. We were all pretty wasted and enjoying the night, and then the riot police rocked up and we were like, I kind of felt like that kid from Project X.
Yes.
Like I fucked up. Like my parents had rocked up and the cops were here, the riot police was here, and like, shit, what do I do now? But yeah, after that week, it simmered to a healthy point where we were doing 3,000 people turnover across like 10 p.m. all the way through to 5 a.m. And it was Melbourne's biggest weekly club night. It was probably Australia's biggest club night at the time, actually.
And unfortunately, just because the actual building itself was sold to developers, we had to close down. And so at our peak, we ran the last of our event at the Palace, which was a really kind of monumental time, I guess, in Australian music history. Like so many great bands played there. We had to throw the last event, but in the build-up of that, what we realized is there's a really good culture of brewing around dance music. And you know, we were going to festivals, we're going to every festival at that time. I think, you know, the Big Day Out, Future Music, Serasonic.
We used to go to them all every year, didn't we?
The first festival we went to was Big Day Out together.
We went to Big Day Out, I think.
We saw the Ting Tings, we saw
Loophole Fiasco,
Cut Copy.
Did you guys go to the Chili Peppers and
Chili Peppers?
And
and even, you know, not the we're proud of these moments, but I think it shaped us as who we are. When we were younger, you know, some of the concerts we used to go to and somehow illegally get into at a younger age.
It's very funny. You know, I think perspective's everything. Like, you know, you look at some of the stuff you used to do when you're young, you know, bloody graffiti or whatever. Any of those. I don't know.
You're right.
Like, you look at some of those things, like, you know, and as you grow through life and you emerge and you realize, shit, I'm sitting on the other side of that fence, literally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you realize that, you know, you are stealing. This someone's business. This someone, and they have to put extra measures, extra fencing, extra security.
Yeah, but unfair. I think at the same time, considering that we went through those motions as kids, fence jumping and like, you know, just rocking up at parties and trying to sneak our way in underage, I've kind of got a little bit of respect for the ones that 100%, get through.
Okay. Yeah. So don't jump beyond the valley. But if you do.
But if you do, it's a creative way.
I got a sideswipe to a story here. Pitch Festival, we love to dress up at. Phil's dressed up in his sheriff outfit, and Phil loves
it was like a what's that American kind sheriff, of like deputy, cliche? You know?
Yeah.
Cooper Phil, Trooper.
Phil's got a respect for them, but he'll get them. Like so these guys are running through the field, fence jump the festival, and Phil sees him. He's like, "Oh, we're on!" Sprinting after the kid, and the kid's running through the crowd. And Phil gets him, tackles him to the ground, and then gets him, grabs his hand, and I'm like, "Oh my god, Phil! Like, look what you're wearing!" And he realizes he's in the cop outfit. So he gets the fake handcuffs and like cuffs the guy. The guy's squirming and Phil's grabbing and Phil's like.
Hand him over to security. Yeah. I was like, mate, you know you're meant to have a ticket. Yeah. And he was like, he literally looked at me and was like, what are you meant to be, a fucking police officer? Yeah. I thought you were a punter here. You're dressed up. Like,
yeah. Some people don't believe, we'll get into that later again about being dressed up and people not taking you seriously at your festival. Like, mate, this is my event.
Yeah, definitely. Well, who the hell is going to think that these like young kids are hosting these events?
Pitch is the funniest though, because we can, everyone, there's dress up culture there. You know, it's like, oh, we'll let a bit loose and dress up. Phil and I had this great idea one year. We're like, all right, this year, stormtroopers. You and me, we dress up as stormtroopers. Oh, and we're going to fucking get into the crowd. Oh my God. Phil comes back to my van and he's like, Mike, stormtroopers. Okay, great. All our friends are dressing us. It took us 45 minutes because it's all the arm, all the shield.
There was like an underlayer of latex that has gone.
Dude, the whole thing. By the end of it, Phil goes, all right, come on, go. Chuck the helmet on.
And Phil... we get to that moment and it's like everything, we're finally 40 minutes in, everything's on, the helmets come on, you can't see shit. And we're like, all right, let's go. Opposite directions.
Phil had no idea. Phil goes to one stage, I go to the other stage.
Each of us thought that the other person was right behind them. So I'm like, I just start marching towards stage one. He's marching towards stage three. And we both think that each other are behind us. And it's just like.
So next minute, we're both at a stage, popping our helmet off, going, I haven't seen another stormtrooper here. I haven't seen another stormtrooper here.
Two lone rangers and stages.
Everyone's like, fuck no, like Jesus. So I'm walking back to the campsite. I'm like, all right, I at least got to make some use out of this stormtrooper thing. We'll supply this to your post show as well.
Yeah.
There's a police car. Then I'm like, all right, I'll just, you know, pop a squat, you know, get a thing. So I jump onto the police car to get a photo. But the arm is so heavy that it goes like, and the cops come out and they're like, oi. And I'm like, oh. So before you know it, now I'm a stormtrooper. I'm dressed as a stormtrooper at my own festival.
You own the best.
Running from the fucking police. I'm like, oh my God. I had to quickly like duck a corner and like, you know.
Well, he could back to the caravan. I'm sitting there just defeated and sweating.
Sweaty from
the He gets there and he sprints there and he pulls up and he's like looking around. He's like, fuck. Like, obviously someone's chased him. And I'm like, dude, what the hell happened? And he's like, I don't know, but I just got chased by police.
So there's some of those moments, some of those like,
I'm sure there's plenty of those moments, and knowing you two, they won't be stopping either. Let's go back though. Talk me through that moment where you're going from being the biggest club promoters in Melbourne to going, all right, fuck, how are we actually going to start a festival called Beyond the Valley?
So we developed great relationships with a lot of the emerging talent agencies in Australia and personal relationships with a lot of the artists like Golden Features, Rufus, Dom Dollar. And we saw a bit of a gap in the market because Mike and I had both attended Falls Festival before. And like you had Falls Festival and Let Them Eat Cake.
It's a different niche.
It's a different niche. And we had cultivated this new era of dance music culture, which was very entrenched in Triple J. And we kind of thought, what if we combine something which was live music, hip hop, we brought on that dance music element, that local dance music culture that we had brought up through anyway, and then introduce a bit of European house and techno music, which was kind of starting to... position itself in Melbourne as a bit of an underground.
So who are we talking about there? What sort of?
So like the first year was Clapton, Pleasure Crafts, Thomas Jack, Kant and stuff. And now a more modern era, we've been booking the likes of Peggy Goo, Honey Dijon, Dennis Salter, Solomon. So back then it was kind of this mix match. And I think to a lot of people, it didn't make sense. And then you see an artist like Kay Trinata on there, who's an extremely talented hip hop producer and electronic producer. And it worked in the end. Rufus Du Sol headlined the festival, and it was an educational process putting on the first era, Beyond the Valley, because it was
you've seen the Firefest documentary.
So give context to what this documentary is for someone who hasn't seen it.
Yeah.
What's Firefest?
Firefest was a famous festival in the Caribbean where everybody arrived. The festival organizer had no idea what they're doing. So they arrived.
One of the festival organizers is now was Ja Rule. So yeah.
The other organizer is now in jail because
Firefest.
Because they had nothing on it. And the organizers were like putting their hands in there, like, sorry, no. And everyone's stuck in the Bahamas. Like, that gave us anxiety, like PTSD of Beyond the Valley year one.
Behind the scenes, it was like that.
But somehow it was seamless to most punters. Yeah. The reason why we moved from that site was you think in theory when you go to a site visit, now like we're a lot more experienced in that field, but you go to a site and it was kind of on a cliff face and we just like, fuck, beautiful ocean. Mm. It's this nice cliff face area. It's all flat, beautiful green grass. And when it comes to game day, there are people chasing their tents down fucking laneways because it's so windy.
Yeah.
And then we've got someone from the EPA standing there in the council with a like a wind monitor reader saying, like, once you hit gusts of 80 to 90 kilometers per hour, your main stage has to come down. And we were just like, that was the first scar of several that happened across the whole weekend that we walked away being like, do we even want to do camping festivals anymore? But we'd worked so hard to get it done. And there was a lot of contractors that were kind of taking us for a ride and effectively taking kickbacks financially.
We were young kids.
How old are you at this stage?
We were 20. 20 when
20
we
years old.
Yep.
And put that into context, you're 20 years old. There's been a festival dominating for years called Forbes Festival, and you are rivaling that now. At 20 years of age, you start a festival to go head to head against, not against, you're not competing. Yeah, it's a different festival, but it's actually ridiculous.
That's the great thing about, like, I guess the music industry as a whole is you want to kind of, like, you know, everyone wants to kind of carve out their own niche and see the whole industry grow as a whole. And what we thought was, we provide a more dance focused electronic alternative to, you know, Falls Festival, which still has now some of the biggest bands and artists playing in the world. But at that point we carved out our niche and we're like, yep, let's go for it. And I guess when I spoke of the whole thing about the Fire Festival thing, I mean, that was just referencing the chaos of learning along the way. Like, you can't anticipate all these things and the extra fencing and the extra this and security and the measures. And that first year was such a big learning curve. But I think the main thing that was the huge learning curve was coming out of that at age 20. And, we suffered a strong, like a big financial loss. Like, at that age, and, you know, our company, like, we lost $1 million in our first year.
20 years of age and you lost $1 million on your first festival.
We didn't have the money. So we're 20 years of age.
Like, I'm laughing, parents, but that's fucked.
Yeah, no, it is.
When we say we didn't have the money, we weren't backed by anybody. We didn't have a bank. We didn't have an external investor. It was all the money that we'd saved in the club, and then credit to like particularly my family, Phil's family, all our families and sisters. And
even with that, like, our families weren't necessarily like super wealthy. So they like chipped in a little bit to help kind of like lessen the blow, but there was nothing that could, like, you know, completely get us by. So we kind of had to pick up the phone and call the suppliers, call talent, talent reps and everything, and say, look, we're going to roll the dice again on year two. We are so confident that this festival is going to be an institution. It's going to be, you know, have a cult following, and we're going to sell out. Just for context, the first year of Beyond the Valley, we sold 7,000 tickets.
What's capacity?
Capacity.
It's about how big you can build it, because with more people, you take on more infrastructure, more risk.
On that site, at the Phillip Island site, it was roughly 15,000. And then after all the weather issues, we moved the following year to Larder Park.
Mm-hmm.
So year two of the festival, and we were behind the scenes booking the lineup, and we'd confirmed kind of like the three artists that we wanted most. There was one that we missed out on, which was Disclosure, but they were Jamie XX, Skepta, and Flight Facilities. And that's when we were like, okay, we got this. Like, this is 100%.
Is that the penny drop?
It's a tough thing when you're sitting there, you've just lost $1 million. You're like, but the festival is great. Everyone loved it. The reviews online are great. But to go again, you need to double down. You need to.
You could lose another $1 million and then we'd be bankrupt.
Yeah. Oh, we'd be living in Mexico.
But that's what I love, man. I love, and this is, and I'm not surprised by this because I've known you guys for years and we've done these things together and I know how you work. But I think that's why before I said I admired what you guys have done. And in a way, it's inspired me because so many people are like, what if people? And they might examine every single situation and they go, oh, but I've got to do this, I've got to do that. But I just love people that just go, fuck this, I'm going to do it and just see what happens. And that's honestly what you did. 20 years of age, you start this festival, it was a success. You've made 15 million mistakes probably at that first one.
Yeah.
You've lost $1 million, but then you double down and go, fuck it, let's do it again. Learn from everything that we've made a mistake from and benefit from it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And every year is a constant learning curve and we felt like we've like-
You're 20.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're 20. I think that-
I was still living with my mum when I was 20 years old.
So was I. Yeah.
Dude, that was the worst part. Like being like, I only just moved out the second year of being there. So the first year after that, and they go, so how was the wrap up to the festival?
You're just walking, like, eating breakfast at mum and dad.
Mum in the eye, but yeah, great. Yeah. Oh, we're sweet for year two, mum. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Well, that was the other thing is we needed money to bankroll the second year, and we didn't have any funding or anything. We just got a lot of artists. There were a lot of the locals just had our back, and then we like ran the club for another year to just kind of like find the funds to be able to bankroll the event. Then we announced, and before, trust me, we had a lot of those what if moments. Yeah. We were just like, what if this happened? What if that happens? But when you're 20 years old, there's a sentiment of just, you know, fuck being it. Naive.
Yeah,
and,
optimist.
And not, yeah, it kind of, it plays a, being foolish kind of played a role in the, you know, commercial success of the festival moving forward. So we rolled the dice, we went again. And I think it was securing those three artists. The main one, it was Flight Facilities right after they released Down to Earth, and Jamie XX after he released In Color, which is to Massive. Date one of the most, you know, popular records probably of all time.
One of your favorite records.
Yeah, Skepta
is probably one of my favorite artists of all time.
Yeah.
So
he's also one of probably the best artists we've hosted, like in terms of just willing to just hang out. Like we played Jenga
with
Nintendo
him.
And he's just happy to hang out, man.
Yeah.
Just. How, like, I just have so many fucking questions like this. How do you even, what's the first step of actually booking a talent? Like, how do you even go about that? And how do they actually take you seriously when you're, like, you're 20? Was there people, like, there's this question is multi-pronged and take it wherever you want it. You're 20 years old. How do people take you seriously? How do you actually go and email someone and say, hey, we want you at our festival? What are the discussions like? How does it work?
A lot of, like, credit to our business partner, Nick Greco, that's one of his biggest responsibilities is booking the talent. And we worked collectively at that stage and kind of booking separate artists and stuff, but he built it all together. And to date, he pretty much manages the whole process, except Mike steps in for some personal relationships, like with Rufus Du Sol and stuff like that. But that year, I just remember we secured all three. We decided to roll the dice. We went on sale, and on the first day of year one, we sold 400 tickets. The first day of year two, we sold 5,000. And that moment in the room, like, we were all in the office and we were like, okay, we're going to do this as a career. Like, this is going to be us for the rest of our lives, or however long we can do it for.
We'd always crave this feeling. Like, it was funny, like, our business goal, we'd see Falls Festival go up and sell out instantly. You know what it was like? You'd have to go into a ballot and you know, sell out instantly, and people would be fighting for tickets and whatnot. We always crave this feeling of just selling out, the instant sellout, knowing that the security's there, our job's done, yep, we've done a good job. And year two was good that we kind of had that spike, but it was just the last iteration of Beyond the Valley 2019 that we did was we sold out in minutes, 25,000 tickets. And that feeling of, like, just seeing all the traffic go online, all the tickets pulling, and you're like, is this actually happening? Like, that's, and yeah, we finally achieved that. So that
was 6 years of work to get it to that point where it would sell out instantly.
And I think a big thing that was the result of that was not just, you know, Beyond the Valley over the years, we've really found its feet as to what it is. And it's much more than just booking the right artists. It's building the right festival, having the right art installations, the stage designs, the food, everything that we kind of build together. We've really built the culture around it. And my favorite thing is seeing kids one year that, like, will come up to me and be like, oh, mate, And they got 6 years of wristbands on, like on. And I'm like, wow, you should shower.
But, that's massive, man. That must be hard.
Because it's great to see that kids have grown up going to these festivals now, and it's that next step wave of culture and whatnot. And you see, there's so many great new festivals popping up. Like, look what, you know, everything that we referenced, Future Music, Stereosonic, Big Doubt, they all came and went because there was a big shift away from large scale festivals waiting in line, paying $15 for a shitty drink or whatnot. Now there's a lot more of a shift towards quality events, and there's so many great events that that fill this landscape right now. And we're happy to be part of that.
Mm. Yeah, no, and you're absolutely dominating it, which we'll definitely go into a bit more. But talk us through some of the artists that you've worked with and the biggest ones that you've, you know, sort of had throughout the time. There's been obviously multiple. Who are some of your favorites? Who are some of the biggest ones you've dealt with?
On a personal level, I would say Rufus and Dom Dolla, just because we're such close friends with them, and they're just like such great stand-up guys and just amazing musicians as well. Like they're masters of their craft, and they put so much dedication into their work. But outside of that, there's been like a few along the way that we, you know, it's very surreal working with or hanging out with the artists that we kind of, you know, 7-8 years ago, we would like kind of aspire to book, and we would watch a lot of their live performances on YouTube or their Boiler Room videos and whatnot. And I think through like starting festival properties like Pitch and Grapevine, and then, you know, one of the biggest reasons that we didn't mention before, that Beyond the Valley works as a festival and as a big lineup now, so seamlessly, is no artist is going to come to Australia for just one show because we're so far away. Yep. If you're an American hip hop artist or a European DJ, you're going to want to come here for 4 to 5 shows and then get out for it to be, you know, commercially viable. So I think two years ago, I always skip 2020 because it's like a year that didn't exist in our market.
I don't remember it.
Yeah. We launched Wildlands Festival, which was something that Mike completely project managed himself. Having that like extra leg to bolster the tour is what, you know, got us Tyler the Creator and Rufus DeSole to headline the festival. And I think
Wildlands is a single day event up in Brisbane, by the way. So
after New Year's?
So it's just before Beyond the Valley. So basically when the artists come to town, so for example, Tyler the Creator, when he's coming to the country, he's like, well, I'm not just going to do Beyond the Valley. I want to do all these other things. Yep. So he'll start at Wildlands, play to 30,000 people there, come to Beyond the Valley, play for us, go to Lost Paradise in Sydney, fly over to Perth, then come back for Field Day, then add on New Zealand. So we work in with a lot of our sister festivals.
Awesome.
And as we've grown, we've started to realize that, you know, if there's not the right property in a segment around the country, we'll expand and create that ourselves. So we got our eyes on a few more spots around Australia and popping up some few events end of the
Unbelievable.
Year.
Unbelievable.
But going back to like the surreal, like the artists, and you touched on like surreal artists that you've grown up with. I think we went to our first ever live music concert together. Yeah. All of us.
Yeah, I was there as well.
Yeah, we all went to the presets. And for me, man, like even, you know, like at that time they were big, but even as my life's gone on, they've gotten bigger. Like people say music, so hearing and scent are the two fondest, the two strongest forms of memory. So like, you know, when you you listen to something and just brings back an instantaneous memory something that you did. And like, that's for the presets to me, brings back that time when we were like 15 years old, going to these concerts,
drinking pulses,
having, nearly having cardiac arrest, like jumping, sweating to the presets.
I distinctly remember black leather chucks, white oversized tees, bad straightened hair.
I think it looks good.
Yeah. And you know, this is great because we all get very involved. We're all very passionate about our brands and the lineups, and we get really involved in like who we book as our headliners. And the presets came up, and Phil and I, 100%. And we were a bit worried that our audience at the time was a bit, you know, the audience was 18 to 21 year olds, and the presets weren't actually on cycle at that point. Mm. And like, we're going to put a New Year's Eve countdown. It's going to be great. It's going to be best. I think it's one of our favorite countdowns, you know.
It was one of our favorites.
It was so surreal. They bring in the New Year's. I'm standing there next to my brother, taking my radio off. I'm not working anymore. I'm like, I got to go tell them how fucking amazing that was. And the theme that year was pink for New Year's. Like, yeah. So So me and my brother, we just walk up the hill and run to their dressing room. I grab a bottle of champagne, I smash down the door, and I'm like, hey guys, I'm Mike. I'm the owner of the festival. Just want to say.
Bear in mind by this point, he's lost his radio. He's lost his
lanyard. Lanyard radio all off.
Oh, yeah. Like, he doesn't even know where they are.
Yeah. Me and my brother go in there, pop a bottle of champagne, toast, to have a new year. Everything's great. And I'm like, I just want to say it's so surreal that you were the first concert I ever have, and it's an honor to have you bring in the new year. That was the best news ever. Thanks, mate. And then everything is kind of getting a bit weird. And I'm like, why are all the extra people in the room being a bit standoffish? I'm like, anyway, guys, you have a good night. I'm going to leave. Walk out the door with my brother. And I look at my brother and he's in a pink cowboy hat, pink fluffy glasses, a nighty and whatnot, and like glitter on his chest. And I go, I look at myself. I'm a dressing mess. I'm like, fuck, we just kicked that door in. Covered in pink. Like, hey, mate, I own the festival. I want to pop some photos. Yeah, man. Like, oh, God. Yeah, I actually saw them at one of our, because we've booked them since. I saw them at one of our other events. And of course, I was just very formal. Like, hey, Michael, oh, we met that other year. Yeah. You probably don't remember.
What other artists have been some of the best to deal with, you know, get along with and enjoy, have fun time?
Dennis Salter is definitely the funnest like artist that we've had.
We love having him here because he stays here for like a few weeks and just laps up the country. Monty, one of our employees, took him to Hillsville Sanctuary and he just spent like 9 hours there. It's like, oh my God, I got all the fluffy animals and stuff. He's just a joy of life. Like there's people that you meet that are genuinely like, hey, I've come from the other side of the world, from my hometown, to play my fans of music and you're making that happen. So I'm so appreciative for that. And they just lap up everything. And they're the people that we want to bring back, and they really connect with our audiences. And it's so great when you see fans come up to them and they want photos after the show. And there's people that are really open to that because some artists get worn out and some artists don't want to always do, meet the promoter or meet their fans or do press and whatnot, because it's a tough life, touring around all the time, you know?
Yeah. It's like there's the artists that we've had such a huge pleasure of hanging out with and have had such a good time with, and those that, even though our interactions have been very brief and, you know, not much has been said, it's been such a surreal moment just being in the same room as them, having a one to
two. Who were some of those people you'd say?
I mean, like Chance the Rapper, Stormzy,
Jamie XX.
He's kind of like a music, because I'm also a musician as well, and he was like, he's probably got to be one of my like greatest creative idols of all time. And meeting him, it was he was very to himself and very, you know,
conservative, or like
very conservative, yeah, which I think is like a common trait in, you know, really talented musicians. And just that, like he just said, yeah, thanks for having me at your festival, it's like, it looks like a cool party, man, thank you. And just that short like encounter for us is something which is quite surreal. The Kooks,
I got one for you, Dil. Like we've got the top 10, like the top 10 list I have to tick off one day. Like we've got to book the Chili Peppers or something.
Oh, 100%.
But the Kooks was on that list, and like being able to tick them off was a surreal moment.
That's unreal.
And meeting the Kooks, and Phil got them to sign
the Seaside. Mike, did they play Seaside? Yeah. That makes me cry, that song.
Naive.
Want to go to the seaside.
No, keep going.
That is a great song.
My mic was
me?
You. When you were on the dance floor, I just remember I knew what time they were arriving and everything, and I went grabbed this record vinyl that I had bought for him of their greatest hits, and then I took it to them, and I was like, my business partner, who like one of the promoters for this festival, he's obsessed with you guys and he's the main reason that we booked you. I would love it if you could sign the record. And they were like, mate, we'd fucking love to. Like, when can we meet this guy? Yeah. I'm like, he's on the dance floor right now. I will have no chance locating him because his radio is off, but you might bump into him.
I'm surprised, Mike, the one band that maybe the number one on your list and you just can't nail them yet is Panic at the Disco. Mike, I've never seen someone listen to Nine in the Afternoon or whatever that song.
Hold on, wait.
Back to the streets.
Are you watching me on Spotify? Are you seeing
my... Man, I love that song, Panic at the Disco.
I'm just wondering how you've stayed up to date, Dil. No one knows about my Panic at the Disco obsession, but that album, A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, I know word for word, and I listen to it probably once a month.
It's a great album.
It's, man, it's so good. It's so fucking good.
Who's on the top 10 list? And who have you ticked off?
I don't know if we can get our secrets away. Okay,
the Wombats, we've ticked them off. Tyler, the Creator was on that list. Yeah. That was probably the biggest one that we had ticked off.
Rufus DeSoul, we got to tick those off. Yeah, probably like nostalgic bands. Like, I mean, like obviously our favorite band in the world. I'm saying this still, but you know, The Killers.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, but how many? I definitely went to one with you guys with The Killers. I've probably seen them twice live.
We saw them when we were in Vegas, like 4 or 5 years ago. It was like the night of the day before my birthday. We were in Las Vegas and we still hadn't organized anything to do. And I was like, I'm in Vegas and it's my birthday tomorrow and I haven't organized shit. And I'm just kind of like scrolling through StubHub on my phone and then I see The Killers live. And this is a band that I didn't even know was playing live anymore. One of my favorite bands of all time, T-Mobile Arena, like arena launch night. Yeah. And we went there and it was just us two and it was so fucking good.
Unbelievable, man. Yeah. They are so good live. The one song that I would want to see them play, and I have seen them play live, but I'd love to see it again, is Sam's Town, Abbey Road version.
Yeah.
Like that, if you haven't heard that song, please listen to that. That's a special song. You know, that really reminds me of Massa, who's one of our mates that passed away way too soon. And whenever I listen to that song, I've got a video of us singing that in the car together, like a week before he passed away, which is it's really special.
I went and visited his folks a few weeks back and I used to burn his CDs for that car, the Love Bug CDs.
Yeah.
And we just put that. I'm like, what is this idea? I put it in. I'm like, what did I put on this? And just the first song. No.
Is that it?
Yeah, it's Sam's Town. So
well, it was in his car. So fucking put it, would have been that CD.
Yeah.
Crazy. Funny dealings with artists. Like, obviously, they're probably some crazy people out there that, you know, they're good for a reason, but they're probably quite strange. Have you had any really funny dealings with specific ones? Or have they made any like really crazy requests that they need?
It's always in quite a professional format as well. They're artist writer. So we get handed a technical and a hospitality writer from every single artist. Mm-hmm. And it's like all the tech requirements in terms of the backline and gear that they're bringing on stage, what lighting requirements they have, what they expect the sound system, you know, to be at in terms of a decibel limit, stage size as well, and capabilities. And then the hospo writer is always ridiculous. Like, there was one artist, I think it was Dylan Francis, asked for a human life size cardboard cutout of Steven Seagal to be in his dressing room upon arrival. Then there was a couple of artists who can't be named, but always just like weed. Gets asked for all the time.
Weeds as in the stuff that you find in your garden.
That's weird, man.
Why would they want that?
Yeah, they say like local herbiculture grass.
Yeah. The way that they word it is always weird. Like, yeah. There's been artists that won't get on stage unless some of that stuff is delivered. Like, there was an artist that we booked 4 years ago in the dance tent at Beyond the Valley, and he wanted a specific type of tequila. And we were like, it's funny going through the hospo riders, like Nick, our partner, always is just like crosses shit off. Like, that it's nobody's business. Like, too expensive. Nah. Crossing all this ridiculous stuff off. No, we're going to get you 5 plain white t-shirts and 5 black plain t-shirts. And like,
why do you need five?
Do you need one? Yeah. Like, and no, you can't have a deck of Uno cards. Like, it just like crosses off all this shit, just gives them the stuff that they actually need. And there was like this specific bottle of tequila that this artist needed. He crossed it off. And then he said to Katie, our artist services manager, who handles all the hospo requests, get the cheap shit. So she brought the cheap shit.
I wouldn't say cheap shit. He said, just get him a knife.
Compared to the bottle that he actually wanted, it was like $600.
Yeah.
We gave it to him. He said, I'm not getting on stage until my actual tequila is delivered. We tried to negotiate with him. He was like, nah, he must have just really liked the tequila.
Yeah.
So Katie, we ended up having to spend even more money because we got him like this $150 bottle of tequila. Then Katie had to go back into like town in Warragul
on New Year's Eve,
find this bottle of $500 tequila, bring it back to site right as he was about to get on stage. He's just standing there behind the actual console itself, and then she hands it to him and he's like, okay, thank you, and he just walks up and he plays.
Unbelievable. I heard a little analogy about this a while ago. The reason I ask is because, so there was a band back in the day called Van Halen. Okay.
Yeah.
Massive band. Okay. Mm. Our parents would have probably loved it.
Yeah.
And they were saying they were the biggest band ever. They had these massive crowds and they were so particular on the way that they wanted their music to happen and the experience to be what they wanted, that they were like, if we go to these festivals and it's all about the little things, it's all about the littlest, finalest details. So they were like, in one of their scripts, they were saying, we want to have a bowl of M&Ms, but in the M&Ms, there can be no brown M&Ms.
I've heard this.
So it's just the things.
Yeah.
And they were saying in the contract, it actually says, if there's no M&Ms there, we get fully paid for the concert and we don't do it. And the reason they did it though, it wasn't the fact that they wanted it. It was more the fact, I think, that they said-
show the artist cares.
Show the artist cares and also-
The promoter cares.
The promoter cares and show the fact that these people that are bringing us out are like doing the right thing or something. And I was that's actually pretty scary. Like, imagine if you didn't read that and they just left.
Imagine one yellow.
One brown one, yeah.
Or just fuck with them, have the brown on top. That's really good, guys. And then move, it's all rainbow. Like, rage, smash guitars.
Best show seen live at your own festivals. What's you said before, the pre-sets were one, Jamie XX.
I've got this weird, not weird, but like it's more of like a niche band that we've had, but the band called Chiasmos at Pitch. Actually, you might know Chiasmos. I see you always sing something.
Yeah.
They're really beautiful ambient electronic kind of soundscapes and two Icelandic dudes. It's phenomenal.
Yeah,
One of the guys in the group is called Olaf Arnold, who's a really amazing pianist that a lot of people might have heard of, but Chiasmos, could not recommend them.
I think there's... Like Solomon at the Wool Store, I would say is one of the... we'll get into a bit of the story.
Yeah, please get into that one.
After Solomon, I would say Fatima Yamaha at Pitch Year One, Dennis Salter at Pitch, and Too Many DJs at Beyond the Valley, who is the two artists from Soul Wax, which is an artist that Mike and I have always wanted to book, but it just hasn't quite worked out.
Soul Wax are on the top 10 as well. If you don't know Soul Wax, get on.
Okay.
Soul Wax are incredible. They kind of hit their peak in 2008 around that whole kind of...
I definitely have seen Soul Wax before,
sure. They were kind of really popular around that whole Daft Punk cut copy presets.
How are you feeling about the Daft Punk news lately? I know you'd
depressed.
Be
depressed.
Yeah. For those who don't know Daft Punk, they've broken up.
Disbanded.
Just finished.
Disbanded. I still have hope that it's...
That was
like
our childhood. It was.
Daft Punk. One of my
favorites. The artist that actually hasn't got a shout out so far, but they're just great, great value in terms of everybody fucking loves them. And we've worked with them. They've probably played like four Beyond the Valley so far. Jungle Giants.
Yes.
They are.
And Best Blokes as well, weren't you saying?
Yeah. Well, that year at Beyond the Valley, everybody had a Jungle Giants story. Everyone was like, I ran into Jungle Giants. Yeah. And I hadn't met them at that stage because it was the second Beyond the Valley. And we're New Year's Day, sun's rising, and everyone's just having a few beers and whatnot. And everyone's talking about how good Blokes the Jungle Giants are. I go, how did you guys all meet the Jungle Giants? And literally as if like it was just meant to be, this tent zips open. 10 bottles of wine, this guy just strolls over and goes, hey guys, I stole these from the artist area. Happy New Year. And he doesn't know I'm the owner of the festival. You know? And that's my shout out to Sam. This is the lead singer of the Jungle Giants. He's an absolute legend. We're good friends now. And I went over to him and was like, hey mate, I'm Mike, I'm the Frodo. Yeah,
that's actually my wine.
That's my wine.
I actually paid for that.
But I love the fact that you didn't know, you just thought that we were kids up on the hill and
you were just giving
the wine away. So everybody's got a Jungle Giant story and credit to them as well. Look at how well they're doing. They're smashing it.
Unbelievable. And having these relationships with these guys and girls, these artists is just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. It's nice to form a personal relationship with them, especially like one of my biggest roles for the festival is creative. So working with a stage architect, stage designers, lighting operators, and just like the overall creative experience of coming into a festival holistically and working with Rufus 2 years ago before Beyond the Valley 2019, when they did the countdown, Mike and I were piggybacked their US tour with them because an artist that Mike manages and that our booking agency represents, Larsings, was their main support across the tour. So we joined them as kind of like half tour manager, but half really just vacation.
Yeah.
You familiar with Larsings?
I am. I've heard some, through you and your promotion, I've definitely given a lot of listen. They've debuted their single or album?
We actually just had five sold out album shows at 170 Russell. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
We'll definitely give a link to the Larsings album in the show notes to check that out. Cause I have heard them. It's a brother-sister duo.
Brother-sister duo from the Gold Coast. Josh just moved in actually after 6 years of living with Phil. Fun fact. Yeah. For those that don't know, Phil and I also.
I don't know how you two, from 15, you guys have like been in each other's pockets. It's been that close.
Well, it's finally fucked.
Yeah. Okay.
Phil's just moved out for the, and Josh from Larsings has moved down to Melbourne. So he's moved in with me. So
I'm sorry. I feel sorry for him.
Strap in, Josh.
Yeah. Oh God, I feel sorry for Josh.
But to finish that story off, we were in America with Rufus, and that's when I was getting a lot of the renders and the CADs forward from the stage designer for Beyond the Valley's main stage in 2019, which was this massive, like 60-meter wide stainless steel, almost kind of like pyramid that we had built.
And it was my favorite stage. It was
We'll get a photo of that.
Yeah.
To show.
Does it appear now on the...
It's on YouTube. It's just like right here.
Right. Okay, whoa, cool. Fuck. Here's the stage. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Jesus. It's big. Look at those poles.
Yeah.
There's no poles.
There's no poles. Okay.
What do you think?
That just feels erection.
Rufus played a role in helping us select what design to go for because we'd been sent like 4 to 5 different renditions and we were sitting there with John from... Rufus and going through, he was like, that one, like, it's not kind of immersive enough. And then, like, him and I were bouncing back and forth on the final result. And we sent back to the designer, we're like, we don't really like any of these. And then we were out for dinner one night in Aspen. And this design came through while I was at dinner via email. And John had like a couple of drinks. And then it was on my phone and he came around and I saw it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the one. And he came up right behind me and he looked at it and he tapped me on my shoulder. And he's like, that's the one.
Yeah. Because I remember they were pretty critical on the one before that.
Like, the one before that, like, they just didn't like it all.
Yeah. They've got their niche, don't they? They've got their style. Like I remember in COVID when we weren't allowed out of the house, they released, I don't know if they've released it then, but they released this thing on YouTube.
Joshua Tree.
Joshua Tree on YouTube. Check that out. It is like, honestly, you could have 2 beers and start crying watching that. It's so beautiful. Yeah. It is like so beautiful.
And it's great the artists that really do the best are the artists that own their craft and are so committed to it. And, you know, everyone that we've mentioned, you know, Rufus, Dom Dollar, Jungle Nose, all those people, they're really, really passionate about just creating the best art that they can and sharing that with people.
So good.
But I think we touched on this earlier, but just like circling, but there's so many stories one of the other best performances we've seen times 3 was Solomon, who we...
So give us reference to Solomon for people that... like. Most people would know who Solomon is, but I don't know where he's from.
He's
French.
He's from.
No, he lives
in Germany.
He's Germany,
but he's originally Serbian.
Yeah.
He's one of the, if not the, between him, Maceo Plex, and a couple of others, like the most popular artist in underground electronic music.
He does some of the most amazing shows. He's done them in like the Coliseum everywhere.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, yeah.
I know my shit, man.
Yeah, you know your shit. Yeah. You know your boiler rooms. So we'd been trying to tour Solomon for like 3 to 4 years. It was a competition between us and several other local domestic touring agents here based in Australia. And we finally won the tour. So we got it done. He came over to Australia for 2 shows. We paid for 3 shows. So it was Friday, Sydney.
Saturday at the Wool Store.
Yeah, Saturday at the Wool Store, which was...
And where's that?
It's in West Footscray.
It's an old wool store that was built in the 1940s. It's heritage listed. It's 4 stories high, but inside, is it going to appear again?
Yeah.
Fuck me, look at that.
That's a big wool store.
Inside, all hollow, like all one giant...
It was initially 3 stories, and somewhere along the line, the architect had decided to...
just hold
remove it all through
floors. Shell.
So
it's a shell.
A 12 meter high ceiling with, it's almost like they accidentally had developed this building, which was
underground rave.
Like the rigging on the ceiling, well, the beams on the ceiling, like the weight capacity on them could hold like tons of lighting and audio infrastructure. So we walked into
Mind you, even though we're saying it's built for a rave, we saw that building, we fell in love with it. And we had to get it fit for purpose to have, you know, 5,000 people in there. So we had to replace all the glass, do the roller doors, new fire systems, get rid of this, and the paving outside. And so it was a really, really expensive exercise. And one that we looked at and we go, we're not going to make any money off this party, but it's going to be the best party that Melbourne's...
Yeah.
You know what? We broke even on it, which is a good result for a venue like that.
Yeah.
And with an artist as expensive as Solomon. He played at the Walsall, and that was our first show there. We ended up going to do 3 more after that, and it's something that will, you know, keep your ears to the ground. It's definitely something which will reappear somewhere down the line.
Watch this space.
Solomon, he performed at the wool store for 2 hours, and he wanted to keep going. He's got a track record of like, he's kind of like, he gets referenced by, at least by Australians, as like the kick on DJ, the marathon DJ. Plays like 5, 6, 7 hours in like Mexico and you know, Amsterdam and Berlin. And
so just to lay out the proceedings, so it's really quick.
Please do. Everyone.
8 to 10 p.m. headline set, the wool store. Mind you,
we advertised 8 to 10 p.m., but we got EPA and council approval to go to 10:30. We surprised the crowd with an extra little 30 minutes.
Fun facts of that night. I went and picked up Solomon because the guy's like, you can be his liaison for the evening. And I picked him up from the airport and I stupidly put him in the front seat of the car and I sat in the back. So I didn't have any control of the radio and I'd had Fox FM blaring. And so no one changed the radio. So we're driving on the way to the venue, Taylor Swift's bearing. I'm in the car with Solomon. And as we're looking at the window, it's like, he wears shorts, I wear a t-shirt. And I'm like, oh my God, everyone just looked at the window. I'm like, this is off to a terrible start. You know, he was just serious, didn't chat to us or anything.
Do you want to talk about your introduction to him? We each kind of have that project, manage our own shows. And this was one that Mike and I, because we were so in love with the building and the artists, we were like, you know what, we'll commandeer this one.
Yeah.
So come game day, I was like, you go pick him up from the airport and go with the transfer. I'll stay here and I'll man the gates and just make sure that, like, you know, everything's going to plan. And I'm like, I don't know where the fuck the idea
was. Was it Veteran?
Veteran.
Because he loves Solomon, which will come in later in the story. Solomon's Serbian.
Veg is Serbian?
Yeah. And Veg was like, you should greet him in Serbian. Like, you're Macedonian.
Oh, God.
You know? And
this is already bad. This is.
Make him feel like he's at home.
So imagine veterans coaching me now. It's like, kako si dobro, si dobro, kako si dobro. And he gets the phrase. Jet lands in Melbourne, mind you, private jet, as in an airport. I'm waiting by the car. He gets off the jet, you know, typical rolling his suitcase out. And I go over and I like shake his hand. I'm like, kako si dobro, si solo, yeah. And he like smiles and like pats me on the back. And then starts talking German to his tour manager. I go, of course you talk German. You've been living there for the last 15 years. you were born in Serbia. It's such a patronizing
pattern. Yeah, like, well
to
done.
Then, to then opening the door for him, you get to the front.
And Taylor Swift.
So I'm in the back and I'm like, I'm failing terribly at this. Literally. So that luckily he plays the most amazing show ever. Comes off such a high, like literally he comes off and he goes, that was amazing. Let's go to the club. Like, let's just go straight to the club. So 8 to 10:30, 2.5 hours there. Club, he's meant to go from 12 to 5, XE54, the old XE54. He wouldn't get off.
So we literally, like, to make sure that we were legally protected, well, not legally protected, we had to close the doors to the bar. And just like close the bar, close the doors. So technically we could keep playing music, but we couldn't serve alcohol anymore. Yeah. So
it was like, it was a lock-in essentially.
Yeah, it was like a lock-in. And then anyone that left, you just open the door and you close it behind you. But no one was leaving until he was getting off. It got to like 5:30 p.m.
It got to 6 a.m.
Yeah, no, it got to 6. But at 5:30, we kind of gave him a tap warning and he looked at us and he's like, I know the time.
He kept on this thing where he'd allow everyone to clap and he'd do this thing like, and then everyone would clap like that. And he'd go, boom. And the security and everyone's looking at me like, Mike. So I had to drag him off. And it was Sheridan.
So yeah, this is where the story gets really interesting. So I go home somewhere between 5 and 6. I'm like, I've had enough. Like, I was at the venue, at the warehouse from like 6 a.m. in the morning. Like, we had a bunch of production issues, which I was trying to help tidy up. And I get home and I'm ready to wrap up. I'm like, this is like, it's been like the longest day ever. I get a call from Mike and Mike's just like, it's happening. And then I was like, what do you mean it's happening? He's like, what do you think is happening? How, like, have you seen this guy on YouTube? Have you seen like the, have you, do you know the fucking myth of Solomon at the Kick On King? He wants to go to a house. He wants to DJ and there's an army of people here.
My request to you is to go, Phil, how quickly can you get speakers and decks to our house in Fitzroy? And he goes, what's happening? Goes, you know what's happening.
Right? Yeah.
Is Solomon going to come DJ the house? Go, yeah, he wants a DJ.
So Vedran, our housemate at the time, shout out Vedran for ruining.
Photo of Vedran up here.
Yeah.
Hey,
you never see this guy.
Do you know who I want to hear from? I really want to hear from somebody because it was meant to be at my house. We're handing out the address. And then it's like literally random people coming up to me. Hey, where's the after party? 60 party, you know, whatever. And I'm like, oh fuck, this is a bad idea. And thank God Vedran
So Mike's called me. I've gone downstairs into Vedran's room, who's asleep. And I'm like, he usually gets pissed off when he gets woken up, but Solomon's his favorite DJ in the world. So, hey, maybe this time will be different. So I'm knocking his door. I'm like, hey, Veg. And he's just like, what? And I was like, look, I'm sorry to wake you up, but I feel like this is something which could excite you.
It's 6:30 a.m.
Yeah. Solomon wants to DJ here. Before I could finish the word here, he said, absolutely fucking not. Yeah. Not a chance in hell. He's like, Phil, 1,000 people will rock up at this house. This is a 3-story townhouse. People will fall off our balcony.
Yeah, he's like, people will die.
People will die if they come.
He's probably right.
Yeah,
and so I had to feel goes, hey, Vedran's not allowing it. Are you serious? And shout out to an amazing man, Alex Donnan as well.
Yeah, can we appear Alex Donnan's first?
Who's like, please have it at my house. And I go, are you serious? He goes, Solomon DJ my house, please. Phil gets in the car, quickly grabs the speakers and the decks and whatever. And out of all things that became iconic for this night is...
I'll take over from here. I'm sorry. You were talking well, but like I was physically the one at Donnan's house setting this up. So I found speakers. I found 2 CDJs and a DJ M900 mixer. For those who DJ, they know, you know what that is. And
yes.
Like,
I don't. I don't know what that is.
There was like... I got to his house and I like didn't bring a table on purpose because I'm like, surely anyone
that would have a
has
table.
A home table. Has a dining room table or just a table in general. He doesn't have a table. He's got like a coffee table, impossible, a couple of like little, like, you know, knee high kind of tables in his backyard. And that was it. And I'm like, fuck, he's 15 minutes away. Everything's plugged in and ready to go. I just need to pick it up and put it on something. And then I look in the corner of the room and I see an ironing board. And I look at Don and Don looks at me and I'm like, it's the ironing board. And he's like, I don't think that's very safe. And I was like, we don't have any other choice. So I go grab the ironing board and just like open it up, put it down, put the decks on it. And I just kind of like, you know, when you press your weight on something to make sure that it's going to be okay. And it just like made a couple of creaking noises. And I was like, you know what? If it collapses, it's part of the story.
Yeah,
it shouldn't
really
be playing here anyway. Yeah. So
who I want to hear from is we changed the address up on the night. We're like, all right, quick new address, Carlton. I want to hear from anybody that rocked up
to your house,
to Rose Street, Fitzroy, and woke Vedran that night because he kept the doorbell. Solomon here? No, Solomon here.
So like, the funniest thought is Vedran walking out in his undies, like scratching his eyes, like, no, he's not fucking here.
But we end up rocking up there, and it started off like because the address changed. It started off really tame, you know, 20, 30 people. Someone puts it on Instagram, Solomon DJing Sunrise, 50 people, 100 people. Suddenly you can't move in the house. You can't get through the hallway at the front door because everybody's rocking up. And our friend's parents drive past and they're like, Alex, no, mind you, let's just put it in perspective. 8 to 10:30 p.m. the night before, 12 to 6 in the morning at the club. He starts DJing at 7:30 at on the ironing board. He finished up DJing at 7 p.m. that night. So did a full 12-hour stint. He went to the bathroom like once. Like he's a fucking
machine. How's his legs get so sore standing up?
He's a machine.
He's a machine. Machine. And it was literally at the point where, I mean, it was when talking about great performances, this is what this came off of. It was a fucking great DJ set as well.
Yeah, it was like really
that
good.
Morning was amazing. And people kept seeing it on Instagram. And there was this whole thing. I speak to a lot of people and they're like, oh, I saw it. And I was like, oh, it's going to be over soon. I won't go. It's not going to be over soon. And then at like 6 p.m. and it's still going. I'm like, what? But our friend's parents drove past his house.
Were they living at the house too?
No. So they lived nearby. But we had just found some like guy that we're friends with to man the front door. We're like, all right, we're at 150 people. This is ridiculous. Like, you cannot let anyone else in.
And then we said sign up at the back. Like, you know,
yeah. So we've basically got like, you know, a temporary security guard at the front door. This kid's like, yep, I'm on it. I've got it. It's this big moment. So he's like standing at the front door and there's like people rock up. He's like, nah, mate, not tonight. just fucking knocking people left, right, and center. And then he comes up to Mike and I and we're on the dance floor and he's like, hey guys, I got to talk to you about something. Like, man, we told you, can't let anyone in. I'm sorry if you've got a friend outside. He's like, no, you don't understand. Come with me. And I look down the hallway and there's a guy there with a bouquet of flowers. And then I walk up to him and he's like, there's a queue of people behind him. And he's like, is it true? Is he here? And then I was like, you went and bought those for this? And then he's like, yes, I need to give him these flowers. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we have to let you in because you've just gone and bought a bouquet of flowers.
So if you're going to cut to one thing, it's this video went viral on Mr. After Party. It's sitting on like 20 million views at the moment. So Solomon's about to drop a thing. The guy gets brought to the front of the crowd, gives him the flowers. Solomon's head goes down. He kisses Solomon on the head. Solomon gets the flowers on the drop and just starts chucking him in the air.
This is on.
And someone filmed on their phone and sent it to Mr. After Party. And literally the caption is, Solomon DJs for 10 hours on an ironing board in Melbourne, Australia. And it's on 20 million views at the moment. It was like, it went down as.
We'll get that video up
there. Yeah.
Be there.
Yeah.
And that was also that night. Because before that, we were, you know, we'd run Beyond the Valley. We'd launched Pitch Vessel. We'd done Grapevine. We were looking at our business as a whole in terms of what are new products that we can develop for our market that aren't going to cannibalize one another. So Beyond the Valley is our big New Year's Eve camping event. Pitch is a more European inspired counterpart, electronic focus, Grapevine wine and festival for the love, very, you know, beachside boutique. And we're like, we were developing all these new kind of products, but we didn't actually have a banner or a name. And that was at that Solomon party was the first event that we ran as Untitled. That was the launch.
So that's when you started the whole group.
That was when we started Untitled because everyone said, "What? We need a name for you guys. Yeah. What are we going to call you? You need a name. You need a
sick name. You've done well. You got to be happy Untitled, with that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Unbelievable. Tell me, look, honestly, I hope you guys got more time because I don't want to finish anytime soon. Rap battle you toured with Wu-Tang Clan. I've heard this from a story, Mike.
I thought you were going to make me rap battle now.
No. I've known this, that you have a special talent. I'm not going to put you on the spot now, but you are incredibly good at this. But what's this story with Wu-Tang Clan and touring with them?
Before he begins the story, I can vouch for that. Mike does have an amazing talent at freestyling.
Spitting bars.
Which is so funny for a guy as white as him.
Yeah. It took when I'm drunk and like on tour with the Wu-Tang Clan. Yeah, it just gets like.
So is it true you beat one of them in a rap battle? Close to?
He held his own.
What actually happened was the two supports for that tour were Ivan Ooze and Nico Ghost. Nico Ghost, a rapper that I managed at the time, and Ivan is managed by Nick Greco, one of our business partner.
I remember meeting him in Sydney with you. Remember?
Ivan.
I was up there in Sydney with you one night. So he was there.
We had this like kind of like rap battle backstage. And I don't want to claim to beat the Wu-Tang Clan in rap battle because like then it'll be like, oh, Beat Magazine or something. Cool, promoter, claim. Then
yeah.
You don't want to get too famous.
Yeah. But I did smoke you, Ivan. And Nico. But probably one of the funniest things that happened that trip was, you know, touring around with that many people, logistics and everything like that. And there was a bit of an incident with like the hotel room keys getting mixed up. And obviously, you know, like the Wu-Tang Clan, one of the best experiences. They were the loveliest guys. The shows were amazing. And instead of hiring tour managers, we tour managed a few of them each. So Nick took like Ghostface Killah, I took Inspector Deck, Phil took RZA. And we just like kind of like, yeah, what do you guys want to do? Like, how do you want to take them around? And there was this incident where I gave Inspector Deck we explained the wrong hotel room thing.
Master Killer.
Oh no, yeah, sorry, it was Master Killer. Sorry. That's why I got the rooms confused. Gave the wrong room keys and I gave him one of Nico's room keys. And there was this moment where we were all asleep in our rooms and you just hear like in the hallway, what are you doing in my room? And then we come out into the hallway and I can confirm the entire Wu-Tang Clan in their pajamas with Nico and everyone's going, what's going on? He's like, this is my room. No, you got the rooms confused. That's this, that. And we kind of had to like simmer that whole thing. But in the end, it was a successful tour and everyone was happy. And yeah, hopefully that's another artist we hope to have back one day soon.
Mm. Definitely. You've both won some awesome awards. Phil, you got acknowledged for the work with Ability Fest you've done. Talk us a bit through that. And I know, Mike, you've been acknowledged with a Richard Branson type of award as well. So I want to hear both about these. Phil, firstly, with Ability Fest, which is obviously, if you've heard Dylan Allcott's podcast, as I'm sure you have, is one of the most unbelievable festivals to date. It's got accessibility for anyone that with a disability and doing incredible things.
Yeah, yeah. So Ability Fest is, well, I guess credit to like all of us as a team and the Dylan Allcott Foundation, all of our employees and my partners and stuff. But yeah, it was just through hanging out with Dylan at parties and stuff. And he was like, I want to start Australia's first all-inclusive festival. And I want all, you know, the money to go to my foundation, the Dylan Allcott Foundation, who are doing amazing things. Basically the way that it all works, and we got, I got recognized by the National Disability Insurance Scheme and, in an interview, during the festival. And, just bring in a lot of infrastructure for people of all abilities. So Auslan interpreters, scaffold structures that, you know, for wheelchair access, a lot of accessible toilets. There's like the mother of accessible toilets called a Marvaloo. It's like this big shipping container converted bathroom, which has like a whole bunch of facilities in it that we got. We had a sensory room that ANZ, we did a commercial partnership with, for people that, you know, had like sensory disabilities and needed a quiet place effectively. So it was, we also had guide dogs there as puppies that people could go and pat and stuff in an area huge. That was away from the music and stuff. And yeah, we're very proud of Ability Fest. It's kind of, we've had a few charity initiatives as part of our process of growing as a company that we're very passionate about, and we're proud to say that we've raised over $500,000.
It's massive, man.
For that foundation, which is great because it goes towards young Australians of all abilities who may require infrastructure or education around, you know.
I think even just from chatting to Dylan, like the about Ability Fest is just the awareness around it. Like you just being an able-bodied person, selfishly, you don't understand what someone with a disability has to go 100%. Through to enjoy, you know, and to have fun. And he tells an incredible story about a guy that, you know, said that was the best day of his life. And yeah, like that is just fucked.
Guy, I went through Luke, I went through a heavy gaming phase when I was 16.
Yeah.
And Luke was like my gaming buddy when we were playing Xbox back in Bundura. And seeing him at the event, I haven't seen him. Like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, man, he was sipping Asahis. Yeah. And I was like, he just had the best day of his life. But I think probably the best thing about, my favorite thing about Ability Fest is, you know, credit to Phil. He does a lot of work on the infrastructure to making sure everyone's catered for. But the viewing platforms that we have, the sensory room, everything, it's not for, oh, this is for people that might have a disability.
Everyone can enjoy it. Yeah.
So my family's up there with everyone and everyone's mingling and mixing. And it's just a fully inclusive festival. Yeah. And it's just well, hopefully, you know, what the future should be and how we should have integrate into all events.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's not commercially viable, but it's a really good step in the right direction. Something we hope to, you know, use as a leader globally.
Awesome, man. And how did you become friends with Richard Branson?
He calls him Rich.
Dick Rich.
There's this amazing organization called Igniting Change, headed up by a great lady called Jane Tewson here in Melbourne. They do a lot of work. Definitely look up Igniting Change. And they're a intentionally small charity. So they work with macro change on a micro scale. So changing one life or one group of thing at a time, and then that goes on to help other people and whatnot. And I've been doing a bit of work with their, they've got a great place called PCY Scene St Kilda and their Music for Youth program and whatnot. And look, long story short, one day Jane just pulls me in and has a chat to me and goes, we're running a summit, it's called Igniting Wonder on Necker Island, which is Richard Branson's island. And I'm looking at the guest list and I really think that you'd be a great guest and we'd like to invite you. And I grew up reading Richard Branson's books. He's actually what got me into, you know, that first
entrepreneurial spark. Yeah.
And I'm like, this is not real life. Like this is joking. And you know, fast forward to March last year, and I got to spend some amazing time with him. You know, it was so funny. We went on this bike ride where he's like, oh, who wants to come on my morning bike ride this morning? And I'm like, yeah. I've got no ACL in my knee. My knee's fucked. Haven't ridden a bike in years.
I'm under 15s.
Have to warn you, it is 20Ks all uphill. Like, you know, it's intense. I was going to cry before I did. I was talking to my partner, Erica, and I was like, I was like, I shouldn't go on. I'm going to be a failure. I'm going to do this. And she's like, it's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Well, lucky they had one of those trail cars following us that you could stop at any time. So everyone got way ahead. And I just got on the car the whole race. Got off at the end of it, pedaled for the last 100. And it was like, yeah, great job. But I got to spend some time not only with Richard, but some amazing entrepreneurs that are doing a lot of philanthropic work and just a lot of, like the people that we met were just great people. Bjark Ingels is like an architect building the first building on the moon at the moment.
Yep.
Just doing all these crazy things that are real leaders in their field. And I was honored to kind of come and talk about the challenges that we face in the music industry and, you know, things like drug policy, which, and a lot of talk around climate action and climate policy here in Australia.
Sustainability,
which is something that we're passionate about and something we're going to be launching, you know, later this year. You know, keep your eyes peeled. We've got one of the greatest things about Untitled and why I was really honored again to spend some time with Richard and those people, because we have a big voice within the youth community. Mm. And if we are starting all these events and every year people are coming through, we've got an opportunity to drive social change, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
And what corporations really should be doing, because, you know, corporations, particularly the big ones and whatnot, they've got the real power to do that. And I feel like that's what we got to really be driving. And particularly with like climate action and green initiatives and something that we'll be announcing later this year, which is really exciting.
100%, man. You guys are doing some incredible things. Like, you think about the surface level of festivals is where you got your game, but like Beyond the Valley Pitch, Wildlands, Grapevine, which is coming up shortly, For the Love and Ability Fest. But as you said, you're turning Untitled Group more into an independent support for artists and change and all these things. Like, what's next for Untitled Group? You've just touched on it then, but it's not just going to be in this festival arena, is it? It's everything. It's supporting artists and also change in young people.
Well, I'll let Mike speak on some of the initiatives that we've jumped on board with outside of music, but some kind of stuff which kind of vertically integrates into our business quite seamlessly. We've got a booking agency which we launched this year, which has been super successful, and a record label and a management of the company, and that's all just kind of aimed around fostering talent and finding emerging, developing talent and, you know, building them and using the resources that we have to help them record music, perform in front of the live like the right audiences and stuff. But outside of that, and I know like COVID's a pretty tired discussion topic, but we last year we got pretty busy in a few other areas while we couldn't run festivals, Mike had a great deal of work.
We kind of just looked at, like, if we can't run events and whatnot, what are the other little areas that we can help in? And some good companies that we just happen to be around and invested in and whatnot. There's this amazing one, if you own a cafe or a restaurant, there's Mr. Yum. You might have seen.
Is that you?
Oh no, it's a friend of ours that built it up. We invested in it during COVID.
Wow. Yeah, I see that everywhere, man. Mr. Yum, it's like what you order all your drinks and food off at bars.
The greatest thing is that, so because of the QR, it's so simple. People were ordering off the menu.
It should have been the way we've been doing things for years.
Well, because people were ordering through Instagram, they're looking at photos and going, oh, I want that. So they put the QR code on the menu, and what they noticed was as people scan the QR code and the picture menu pops up, the average order was going up by 20 to 30%.
Wow.
Because people aren't rushed to order and whatnot. So it's such a simple initiative and just changing the way the future is. And now they're over in the US and taking off through the US. So that's a great company. We launched a fitness brand called 20V.
Heard of this. That's why you guys are looking so freaking handsome right now.
I was waiting for you to mention
that. Yeah, I can't even right now.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I can't even.
If anybody's heard of like EMS, electromuscular stimulation.
I don't reckon they would have, but explain it.
Well, mate, okay. So
it's quite intricate, isn't it? It's a new tagline.
Well, in Europe, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone's going crazy there. But it's very new here in Australia and everyone's going crazy over it because the tagline is 20 minutes in the gym. 20 minutes equals 4 hours in the gym.
So good.
Or 20 minutes there equals 90 minutes of HIIT workout, which is, people see that and they go, that's just a gimmick tagline. Like, no joke, 20 minutes there. And the reason being is because when you traditional weight training, it's weight bearing, you're using a weight to oppose your contraction of your muscle, and that's what tears the muscle or not. With EMS, you're using a current that you get your baseline reading, and the current makes your muscle contract. And when you're doing movements that oppose that contraction and whatnot, you're tearing the muscle fiber essentially.
Yep.
So instead of doing, I'm gonna do biceps for 10 minutes, I'm gonna do legs for 10 minutes, I'm gonna do chest for 10 minutes, it's like doing
bicep curls, triceps, abs,
at
squats,
once, and cardio.
At once, at cardio, 4 seconds on, 4 seconds off, 4 seconds on, 4 seconds off for 20 minutes straight. And everybody sees it and they go, you guys are cheating.
You're just, I'm coming.
Yeah, yeah, you got to come down, mate.
Where's the studio at the moment?
First one's in Paran, so yep. 20V in Paran. But we've got one opening up soon over the South Melbourne, Port Melbourne area.
Love it.
And then there's going to be a few north side and then some in Sydney. Oh, and Gold Coast. We've got one in the Gold Coast at the moment in Broad
Beach. And you guys are fucked, honestly. I actually, fuck off. Like, you just do too much cool shit. Like, what is there anything else that, what else is on the horizon? Like, I genuinely think
anything,
you're doing everything.
Anything that we're kind of involved in though is stuff that we've seen and gone, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like that should, more people should be doing that. Like we really do back the EMS training stuff. Mm. You know, there's a few companies doing it. We've kind of bought the highest grade machines and got the really good trainers or whatnot for 20V. So Mr. Yum, that stuff. There's some other kind of things that we do with our business.
Muso, good one. Yeah. Which is kind of a similar platform to what Fire Festival used to, well, didn't do right. Muso is kind of doing the way.
Yeah. If you're like an up and coming musician and you want to look to get gigs at venues, because most gig bookings don't happen at concert venues like the Forum or everything. They all happen at pubs, birthdays,
Northcote Social.
Yeah. And so it's just a good platform for venues and artists alike to kind of find each other. But in terms of like the more untitled stuff, we have been focusing a lot of our energy and attention towards doing smaller shows at the moment. We did a few shows with the Arts Centre at the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl,
yep.
One with Running Touch and one with a festival that we run called Sun Cycle. Outside of that, we've it's been kind of week by week at the moment in terms of the
just
capacity.
Bouncing
events.
Back from everything as well, I suppose, yeah. Building it up. Because you've got Grapevine coming up when?
Grapevine is coming up in October.
And Inspired Unemployed hosting that.
Yeah, they're going to be hosting, they're going to be huge. DJing, they're going to be
those guys, we went up to Sydney and chatted about like, you know, what's it going to be like, the hosting and figuring out the DJ sets. They're super excited. And, you know, we got onto that when they were taking off during COVID. You know, they only had a couple hundred thousand, tens of thousands of followers. And now look at them. And
I hope you locked them in earlier than when they were on 1 million.
We started negotiating it early, but Grapevine's going to be a big moment.
When can we actually, like, just like, I'm not even plugging this, but I'm keen as fuck. When can we actually get tickets for that?
Are they available?
Out. It's all that. Fantastic.
Grapevine.
Can I just call you like I used to?
Just call us out the front. We'll come outside. We'll give you a fucking a wristband.
Right now, Grapevine's done and dusted for October.
Yep.
We've got For the Love Festival on sale still in the moment in Queensland and Perth. Still some tickets on that. But I think we're gearing up now for the big New Year's festivals, which is, you know, Beyond the Valley,
BTV, yeah,
and whatnot. But I think the best thing is just if you're interested in those events, I think just staying up to date with like with us on Instagram and being part of our mailing
list. Untitled group?
Yeah, Untitled group.
And you can get on the mailing list and just be on it all.
Yeah, yeah. But in terms of, it's been kind of nice to kind of grease the wheels again, running these smaller events. We've been doing a lot of shows at the Timber Yard and...
Have you seen those events?
I will remember we spoke earlier about not answering my calls for the last 5 years. So I've sort of been trying to get to a few.
We've been in the party just.
Yeah, like, no, yeah, I'm, yeah, I've been out the front calling with no answering.
It was really good inside.
That's good. This podcast actually wasn't to tell your story. It was just like just to rekindle again. Yeah. Friendship and hopefully get you answering my calls.
You said this was lunch.
Yeah, it was meant to be lunch. Mike said, let's get lunch. And I was like, well, fuck, I'm probably a doubt to not see him again for another 6 years. So maybe let's just do the podcast first over lunch.
Well, actually, you know what? I said to Phil, because I was like, fuck, deal grill me. And I was like, because obviously I'm at the club every week. I'm at the event every week. You know where to find me. Come down.
Yeah, it's true. No, it is true. No, it's both ways. But no, I'm joking. It's definitely both ways. But I was like, you know what? I know how busy I am these days. I know how busy everyone is. I know how busy you guys are. But I was like, one thing that I've been really big on this year is like being present. And I'm trying to be better at like with my relationships. And I was like, 100%. I've known these two guys for so long that I can't afford to just like let good friendships not catch up. And like, not that our friendship was ever going to leave, but I was like, we catch up today.
That's
why
when you called me up, I was like, you're like, mother. Won't swear.
Oh, I had a go. I was like, man, fuck you. You owe me an apology. You owe me an apology.
You know what's so great is that we reference, like, you know, we sold a few stories about Suede and things like that. That under 15s, that football team, and that was genuinely the formation of a lot of things that started.
Yeah, it's it was such a tight bond and friendship group that like you bump into anyone nowadays that was within that footy club, like Alex Miles, Andrew Schoolhouse. I love bumping into Andy Schoolhouse.
Brock, Hal, G-Boy.
Yeah, G-Boy.
Gabe Hamilton. Yeah, it's incredible, man. And like just to, you know, even when I tell my mates, like I know these guys and they're like, no, you don't. I'm like, well, I actually do. Like it's, you know, it's crazy. But nah, man, you guys, honestly, you know, I couldn't honestly as a friend just be prouder of what you've done. Not just proud, but like fucking you give me so much motivation to just like not just do my thing, but I think even the listeners, like they're going to walk out today of listening to this hour and a half chat and just be like, fuck it, why can't I do this? And that's like the biggest message that I want to send to people is like, I'm not doing fucking anything, but like I am because I just do it.
Yeah.
And you guys were like the pioneers of that. You just fucking do shit. And I think that's the biggest message that any young person or old person, anytime, just go
probably,
for it.
Probably one of the biggest things to take from that whole just doing it mentality, not to quote like Nike or anything.
Yeah.
One, can we make the Nike logo up here?
is that, yeah, we were scared. And yeah, it's that initial step of action. People scared of failure that makes them stop. And one of the biggest things that I think is great was people that were older people that were mentors or helped us that were just in the industry with no commercial gain or anything from that, just were happy to talk to a bunch of young kids starting up a festival and had no ulterior agendas or motives. And we like to think that we are now starting to do that with a lot of young promoters and artists and stuff coming through, empowering them. Like if you want to get into events or if you want to do that, like, you know, take the right avenues, take the right mean, drop someone a nice note and say, hey, can I get your email address? I'd like to send you a message. You know, find someone on Instagram and drop them a message and say, hey, don't be afraid to put yourself out there, because ultimately the worst thing that can happen is if someone else just wants to ignore you or be a dick about it, you know, that's on them. But we really love seeing people that are open and ambitious and like, oh, I wanted to do this or that. And it's great just seeing a lot of friends like yourself doing great things and putting themselves out there. And and at the core of it, just passion. Like, you know, you're passionate about this and you could feel it. And it's been a great chat, Dill.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome, man. Nah, guys, thanks so much. As I said earlier, it's fantastic. Nearly tear in my eye. Bringing it back, all the incredible memories. And as I said, I can't further and more how proud I am of both of you and what you've been able to achieve and big, big things to come still. So not only are you dominating, but you're having a massive impact on a lot of people. So can't thank you enough for coming in. And let's not wait too long between drinks.
No, I think at this rate with the stories as well, I think we'll probably got.
I think we've got a few more.
Dylan Friends will be probably number one podcast.
Yeah. Well, it already is. And again, that shows you that you don't know anything about my life.
Number one podcast in sports. I was going to say congratulations.
I've actually been paying attention to that. I watched the Dylan Allcott one. You don't know shit about Dylan Friends. Thank you.
I just said number one in the world. I know it's number one in sports. Thank you very much. Congratulations on that, Dylan.
Yeah, he told you that.
It's fine. I love you both. I love you both, no matter what.
Love you, dude.
We've been through too much. And let's go of a bloke and a barbie.
Done.
Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
If that wasn't enough for you and you want even more, you're in luck. Dylan Friends is now on Patreon. Dylan Best Friends. If you'd like to learn more, you can head to patreon.com/Dylan Friends or you can head to the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Dylan Friends podcast. If you liked the show, it'd be a massive help if you could like, follow, rate, leave a review, or even share with your friends. The show is produced by myself and Sam Bonza. Damon Jackman from Creative Edge Films is responsible for audio and visual production. The show is recorded at the Dylan Friends studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you'd like to get in touch or suggest a guest or advertise with the Dylan Friends podcast, please email us at inquiries@dylanfriends.com. Thanks so much for tuning in.